Hello. Welcome to the third episode of the Motivational Interviewing and Beyond podcast. I'm Joel Porter. On behalf of Steve Rolnick, we'd like to just welcome you, and we appreciate that you are listening to us. And this episode, we talk about advice and feedback. What is it? Is it a task? Is it a skill? Is it an art form? What are the tricks? What are the traps? Steve actually even does a demonstration about how he would give advice and feedback. We're joined by Andrew Brownhill, Orla Adams, and Judith Carpenter, friends and colleagues of ours who spend a lot of time during their workday giving suggestions, recommendations, advice, and feedback to patients, clients, and students. So we look forward to your comments and questions, and please, as always, share this with your friends and colleagues.
Dr. Switzer?
Yes, come in. I'm just washing my hands.
I'm Catherine Bigman. Janet Carlisle referred me.
Oh, yes. Feels being a very alive in a box.
Yes, that's me. Should I lay down?
Oh, no, we don't do that anymore. Just have a seat. And let me tell you a bit about our billing. I charge $5 for the first 5 minutes, and then absolutely nothing after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Too good to be true, as a matter of fact.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that our session won't last the full 5 minutes. Now, we don't do any insurance billing, so you would either have to pay in cash or by check.
Wow, okay.
And I don't make change.
All right.
And go.
Go.
Well, tell me about the problem that you wish to address.
Oh, okay. Well, I have this fear of being buried alive in a box. I start thinking about being buried alive, and I begin to panic.
Has anyone ever tried to bury you alive in a box?
No, but truly thinking about it does make my life horrible. I mean, I can't go through tunnels or be in an elevator or in a house, anything boxy.
So what you're saying is you're claustrophobic.
Yes, that's it.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. Most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Oh, you're there.
Stop it!
Stop it!
Stop it?
Yes. STOP, new word. IT.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So, I should just stop it.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to go through life being scared of being buried alive in a box, do you? I mean, that sounds frightening.
Yes.
Then stop it.
I can't. I mean, it's been with me since childhood.
No, we don't go there. Just stop.
So I should just stop being afraid of being buried alive in a box.
You got it. Good go. Well, it's only been 3 minutes, so that will be $3.
I only have a five, so.
Well, I don't make change.
Then I guess I'll take the full 5 minutes.
Fine. All right. Well, what other problems would you like to address?
Well, welcome everybody to Joel and I welcome you to our third webinar on this occasion on the subject of giving people feedback and advice. That was comedian Bob Newhart. I'm Steve Rolnick, and I'm speaking to you from Cardiff, Wales. Over 10,000 miles away, there's Joel. Joel?
I'm Joel Porter. I'm in Gold Coast, Australia, and I'm delighted to be doing our third adventure in MI and beyond. And so I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm a motivational interviewing trainer. Two things I'm very passionate about and I've been doing for a long time.
Joel, thanks very much. Your image is frozen. Oh, there he is. We've got him back. Anyway, I'll take over at this point just to let you know what the structure of this webinar will be. And it's going to cover three sections, three words: why, what, and how. So to begin with, we'll ask this question: why is it worth improving the practice of giving people feedback and advice? Then we'll try and clarify what exactly is giving advice and feedback. And then thirdly, and this is where we'll spend most of our time, we're going to have a look at how one can get better at that. And to be blunt, we're going to offer you a simple framework for improving your competence that is embraced by three words: ask, offer, ask. And you'll see us discussing this, you'll see me trying to demonstrate it, and so we're hoping you'll come away from this webinar with practical pointers to actually improving your everyday practice. But before that, before we start, we thought we'd just throw a poll out to you to get a feel for what your interests are. So I'm going to ask Steve in the studio, please, to put our first poll up now. What are you curious about? Choose as many of these options as are relevant to you. I'll give you just a few seconds to do that. And then Steve will give us a summary of the responses, and then we can all share some sense of what people are interested in. Somebody's saying it'll only let you pick one option. Okay, if that's the case, then check one. Okay. Check the most relevant one to you. Steve might or might not change that, but if he doesn't, choose one option. Thanks, Melvin. Nice to know you're online, man.
Yeah. I don't think I can change that during the poll, Steve, but we're up to 87% voted now, if you want me to.
And yeah, let's go. Let's just have a look at it, man.
Some people can't see the poll, but we'll work it out as we go. We really appreciate the feedback.
Okay. So there's quite a folk in sport and education, and there's a lot of folk in healthcare and mental health, and that gives us a good feel for who's online. So thank you very much for that. If we could close that down now. Thank you very much. Let's get on to the first of our three topics, which is, why is this an important subject? And, you know, one way of examining a topic or someone's skill is to consider what happens when things don't go well with giving advice or feedback. And I came across in a local online newspaper in Wales a video where things don't go well. And Steve, if you could play us that what we call the wheelchair video now. Let's have a look at that, and then we're going to move quite briskly on to our first interview. It's funny, by the way, this video.
Well, will you open this? Oh, God. Oh, you've done it, though.
Oh, well done. See? Oh, that's it, it's gone.
I
I also got some bugger in this fine flat, because you can shove that where the bloody sun don't shine. How's that? Bloody marvellous, now piss off all of you. I don't want no wheelchair, whoever it's for. Jesus Christ, I've never seen anything like it in my bloody life, you cheeky lot of cows. Well, I'm not bloody well, but I don't want a pissing wheelchair. Well, what? We thought you could think again. When we went to the hospital, it would be much easier to get into the car rather than do what we did. Piss balls to you. I don't want to say I'm trying.
Go on. I'm forward with it. Go on.
I am not going in a bloody wheelchair. I've got bad legs, but I ain't going in no bloody wheelchair.
Go on, Mum. Show me how good it is.
Bloody marvellous. You look wonderful in it.
Your grey
ass
and giant
going in old bloody wheelchair.
Whose
venture is it?
It's
your
mother.
Or your father.
Don't look at me. I've got nothing to do with this whatsoever.
You know what you can do with your wheelchair. Shove it up your ass. I don't want it. But I'm going to keep it in my car. So when we go to the hospital to have his knees done next time, I can park when I like and I can run you through the car park like this. We can I did Tuesday. I ain't down a wheelchair. I know it's very nice of you, Mr. Lovely. I like the colour. Now go away.
I'm going to get a pink one now.
I'm going to reach in and I've heard everything. And you? And if you want anything to do with it, you'll be 41.
You'll be 40? No, 41 then.
I tell you what, there's a lovely spare seat. Then there we go.
Well, I thought it was
bloody marvellous. You know what you're going to
do? Well, we all decided, didn't we?
Yeah.
You leave me out of this.
Why? You're afraid of me?
Mm-hmm.
I had absolutely nothing to do with it, other than the fact they came out of my account. That was the only thing I had to do with it.
Honest.
I wonder if you noticed, I love the way Grandad just sat there grinning throughout the whole thing. But I guess... What this leaves us wondering is, you know, you can have the best of intentions for someone else, but how you act on your good intentions in someone else's apparent best interest is another matter. And this leads us really beautifully onto our first interview, which I think will help us address this question of how you might proceed. And Orla Adams is a dietitian. She's a good friend. She's a service manager. She's a trainer in motivational interviewing and more. And she's speaking to us today from Cardiff, Wales as well. And welcome to you, Orla.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Joel.
Hey, Orla.
Hey.
It's wonderful to see you, Orla. And we've just got a few minutes this afternoon. And I wanted to see if I could get you to capture the guts of your experience past and present. And maybe if we could look back, Orla, if we look back at your practice, what was kind of not working well or going wrong for you with giving people advice and feedback?
Oh, thank you, Steve. For some reason, you've blocked yourself off from the camera. Is that intentional? Oh, there you are.
I'm with you now.
Thanks for inviting me along to this. If I don't take up too much of your time, if I go back to my early days of training, it started then where we were, the main focus of our intervention was to give advice. And by giving advice, the hope was that we influence people to change all of these health behaviours. We had tick boxes to show that we covered all the advice that we'd give. We had maybe a 20-30 minute consultation with a patient, and the main focus was us talking at them, telling them what to do, how to do it, the tips, the ideas, all this evidence that we had. It was like we had to dump it all on them. It never felt quite right, but also we never really found out much from the patient about what they were going to do with this advice. We just assumed that they would change it. And that's where the fault lay with it, really, is we quickly learned, well, I quickly learned that people didn't change their behaviours based on this advice dumping. And in fact, sometimes we enhanced it and made things a bit worse.
Wow, you even noticed that.
Mm.
Yeah. So you were well informed. You felt well informed, but somehow it wasn't working out and it left you feeling frustrated, if not downhearted about your work.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And that came with a bit of time. So I started off very fresh and very enthusiastic and wanted to let people know that I knew all of the stuff that I'd learned. And as people either came back to see me again or didn't come back, that's when the frustration started. And I felt as if I was really banging my head against a brick wall. And what was wrong with these people that they couldn't take on this brilliant advice? You know, I was blaming them for it. Never thought about me being at fault.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when it gets frustrated for you when somebody else doesn't change, there can be this inclination to say, oh, there's a problem with them.
Yeah.
They're not motivated enough
to
do what I want them to do.
Yeah, very much so.
And I remember you actually once telling me you even thought of quitting your job.
Yeah, and that wasn't that far into practice. So I reckon maybe about 4 or 5 years in, I was frustrated. Yeah. I would sit with my head on the desk in between patients, and I'm sad to admit that, but I thought, I can't spend the rest of my career doing this. It felt heartless. It felt I wasn't achieving anything. I felt ineffective. And so I really started to think about life beyond the NHS, really, in dietetics.
It got that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Orla, I know your story, but I know that the participants in the webinar don't. Things started changing for you. What was that about?
Well, I just thought there's got to be a different way. And we were introduced to some training in around 2004, which brought up the topic of approaching these conversations in a different way. And then MI was mentioned in that. And that sparked something for me. I thought, maybe there is another way to this before I give up on it all. And so I went to one of your first workshops in Cardiff. And even within the first half an hour, 1 hour, and I hadn't read much about it by that stage, it all just started to spark something. And I thought, wow, there is this whole world out here of having conversations in a helpful way. And so that's when I really began. And even leaving there that day, I got the book, I started reading, coming to more workshops, and it really went from there.
Yeah, and in this webinar, and indeed in our conversations, Orla, we're not interested in promoting motivational interviewing. What we have in common is we want to improve good practice.
Yeah.
And that refers to both the well-being of the patient or the person you're speaking to, as well as ourselves. That's our focus. And it, just before we say goodbye to you, you know, you're a dietitian who's been flooded with expert information about what's good for your patients. Can you put your finger on one or two things that you think in everyday practice makes the biggest difference for you?
When it comes to giving advice?
Yeah.
The first one is asking what people want.
Okay.
What is it that they want to focus on? What do they want to know more about? What support can I offer them, and what information will help? And simply asking that has cut down so much wasted time. It has found focus pretty quickly. They tell me what they want and need. And the second one, which is those moments where I ask permission to go there with things.
Yeah.
So if I say to someone, would it be okay if we talked about this?
Yeah.
And those two changes were enough, I find, in my early days of learning MI to completely change the engagement, the conversation about this.
Yeah. And then some of your colleagues also noticed what was happening in your consultations, and slowly over a period of years, the culture, as far as I remember you saying, the culture changed.
Yeah. Very much. So we would come out of clinics and we all congregate in one place, and that's where the chat happened. And I'd come out and say, wow, the impact of this. Patients are saying things completely different. They want to change. They are changing. And that's started to filter through. And the sense then that I got was I came into this job to help people. And now I feel as if that's what I'm doing. And I don't want to leave that ever.
Yeah. And so the culture of your service changed,
so.
The way you describe. I mean, what's lovely about what you're talking about, Orla, is that the changes you're talking about aren't particularly specialist. They're quite they're actually quite simple adjustments that you made. And so look, on that note, I'm going to say goodbye to all, although it'll be lovely to carry on speaking to you. I'm going to say goodbye and thank you so much for coming on board with us today. Eh? All the best, eh?
It's a pleasure. I'm loving these. Good luck with the rest of it.
Yeah, bye. Hey. Well, stay with us audio-wise, eh?
Will do.
Yeah, bye. Many thanks, eh? I must say that knowing Orla as I do, Joel, I noticed a shift in Orla over the years from wearing the lenses, if you like, of a deficit detective looking to correct what's wrong with people to wearing strengths lenses, which is an impression you get from her as a person. And seeing these patients as people first, patient second. And that shines out of all that. I don't know what if you got any comments, Joel.
Yeah, I do. I mean, one of the things that that continually kind of runs through my mind and listening to Orla talk, who's working with people around, and I imagine some pretty acute and important health issues, is this question of why is it that good sound advice or even common sense doesn't prevail, right? And I think what she was stepping us through there was that actually maybe some of the times it doesn't prevail is because we don't even bother to engage in people in a conversation that's a conversation about themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of our training early on is just to go in, come up with a diagnosis and start fixing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think just beneath the surface of Orla's account, which is something that's at the heart of motivational interviewing, was another kind of shift. Not only was she better able to engage with people, but she shifted her orientation from it's my job to persuade them to take on board this feedback and advice to I'm going to bring them alongside and get their ideas about what is best. And so that sounds to me like quite a shift that Orla went through. And then on that foundation of seeing them as people first who I bring on board, it's much easier to give advice and feedback.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is going to keep bearing out during the course of this webinar is just, and even that video, the Stop It video that we watched bears out, is just telling people what to do just doesn't always work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think, Joel, it's a good moment to get on to some Q&A, hand it over to Stephen. Then we can get on to the second section of the webinar, which is what is the difference between information and advice and feedback? Steve, Q&A, have you got anything lined up for us there?
Yeah, we've got some great questions coming, Steve. There's one actually that was for Orla, but Orla's back in the crowd now rather than on the panel. But maybe Orla, you could answer this in the chat. So Fiona Holland asked, did the tick box also change as your practice evolved? So Orla, if you want to answer that in the chat, that'll be great. We've got another question for you guys coming from Lenny, who's a baseball coach in New York City. And Lenny asks, how come I never got training on how to give feedback?
That's brilliant, Lenny, because that's exactly what Orla would say. She'd say, well, our heads were filled with all this expertise, and then it was just a question of handing it over to people. And, you know, Lenny, I don't think you're alone. I think we've all fallen into what I've called an expert trap, where we think that all we need to do is somehow transmit this wisdom and knowledge onto other people. And to comfort you, I can say that the culture has shifted. It's shifting in healthcare, it's shifting in education. And for example, in our world of sport, Lenny, many coach educators here in the UK have come on board with a shift in thinking. Have a look at the UK coaching website. You'll find inspiration there. And in fact, join them because they have adjusted their orientation in terms of educating coaches. So there's hope, Lenny. There's hope, my man.
Steve, I think something like feedback is one of these things we just assume everybody knows what to do. Yeah. Right? You give feedback. You just tell somebody what they need to do better or what they're doing, and they'll improve. And I was just thinking, you know, I spent probably 10 years in studying psychology at university, and I can't remember one course where we talked about giving, therapeutically giving feedback in a helpful way, other than giving people like psychology results. There was no real focus on how do you actually share important information with somebody to get them involved in the conversation.
Totally agree. If I could wave a magic wand over healthcare, education, and sport, it would be that everyone involved, all the practitioners, are much more skilled in the topic of our webinar today. That would be my magic wand fantasy.
Absolutely.
But Steve, on the question Q&A front, I'd like to move on if that's okay with you.
Of course, Steve. Yeah.
Thanks, my man. Thanks very much. I wanted to turn to the second section, which is, what do we mean by giving feedback, advice, and information? And I've got two questions to raise. The first is this a task, which is how Orla described her education? Is it a skill, or is it an art form? Joel and I are not going to comment here. We're going to leave this to you as learners, so to speak, to make up your own minds by the end of this webinar. But I've ducked the question I've raised, which is, what is the difference between feedback, information, and advice? And I want you to offer just a brief explanation of how I see the difference. We'll then go on to Q&A, Steve, and then we'll move on, because we want to get onto the section on how you can improve practice. Information is simply data or observations that you share with somebody. Advice is something extra. I see Joel nodding his head, which is helpful here. Advice is something extra. If you like, it's information with a sting, in that it contains a pointer to the person actually changing their behavior. Feedback can consist of either.
So advice is more personal. That's what you're saying, Steve.
It's
personalized to the person, to the individual.
Yeah, I guess so. So perhaps those distinctions are helpful. Feedback can consist of either just a simple observation. This is what I've noticed. This is the data, whatever. Advice is actually a more personal suggestion or pointer, if you like, to this is what you should do about changing your behavior. Okay. And I think, Steve, I felt I rushed a little bit there in the earlier section. So why don't we open it up to Q&A again?
Just add a little bit about feedback as we're going through the question.
Yeah.
Feedback is more of a, as I was preparing a little bit for our comment, a lot of the definition of feedback either comes from sort of an engineering perspective or a communications perspective, but it involves some sort of circuit. It's a two-way circuit that happens between the feedback provider and the recipient.
That's very interesting. And let's hope we can pick up the circular nature of that when we turn to the third section on how we can improve our skills. Yeah. I wonder about you, Steve. Any questions you've got there that you'd like us to answer?
Yeah, we've got quite a few in the pipeline, Steve. First up, Helen from Johannesburg asks, what do you feel is the most important skill in giving feedback?
Wow. You look a welcome, Helen from Johannesburg. You make me feel at home. But your question is, what do you feel is the most important skill in giving feedback? And I'm wondering, in the light of your comment about engineering, Joel, whether you would like to...
Well, I think there are two parts to giving feedback, Helen. I think one part is providing the feedback, and the other part is receiving it. And then I think the other added skill is how the person who provides the feedback listens to what the person who's receiving it has to say and how they respond to that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when we're giving people feedback, it can make them feel quite uncomfortable. Yeah. And how we respond and in a more attuned, empathic way can make them more open and receptive. So I guess one is giving good feedback that's specific and that it's something that people can actually, gives them an anchor of something to actually think about, but then listening to how they respond to what you say and need, if need be, attending to how they feel about that in an empathic way, or ask them what they think about it, or is there anything else you'd like to know? Try to make it a collaborative process.
So Joel, would you say this is a task, a skill, or an art?
I think it's all three.
Yeah, it's exactly.
I think it weaves together, because often we're tasked to give feedback to somebody. We need to do it in both a skillful way, and we need to flow with it in an artistic manner.
Mm. And I wonder how you feel about everyday practice out there in education, healthcare, sports. How is it viewed?
Probably as more of a task and a skill and less of an art would be my guess.
Yeah. And you see, that might be where the problem lies. I mean, I've noticed this in education with my children, that feedback is formalized into a paper and pencil exercise. Obviously, there's an incredibly sophisticated technology that renders the feedback a task, not a skill. And I've noticed that in sport. And Joel, with your agreement, I'm going to move on to the third section of our webinar, which is how can we improve practice?
Yes.
And it provides what I've just said in this discussion we've just had, provides a lovely introduction to our next guest, because he works in sport. And that's where I've seen feedback formalized almost to the point of being depersonalized, because it's viewed only as a task. So that's a question we might want to bear in mind as I interview our next guest. Now, Andrew Brownhill is going to come on in a moment for a few minutes. And you'll see Andrew's picture up on the screen. And I don't know the guy, Joel. He's a professional rugby coach, and I suspect quite a lot more. And all I did was I picked up on Twitter that there's this rugby coach with an interest in the subject of giving feedback. And I thought, well, rather than invite close friends and colleagues and MI nerds onto these webinars, why not just go for someone like Andrew? And it's fresh and new. And so I don't have the faintest clue what he's going to say. But I do know I want to say welcome to you, Andrew. Thank you.
Yeah. So welcome, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on board. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on board and just taking a chance with us, eh? And
I think it's good. I think it's good to acknowledge that both Steve and I are massive rugby fans. So I'm looking very forward to having the time that we have with you, Andrew.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So Andrew, we won't get into rugby nerd talk if we're wise, right? Although it's tempting. But Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I want to ask you, why is this an important topic for you? But won't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You're a rugby coach.
Yeah. I'm in a very, very lucky position where I get to coach rugby day in, day out for a living. So I'm very, very fortunate in that aspect. So I don't really see it as a job. It's more of a hobby that's turned into something where I can actually really enjoy. So I coach, I work with Scotland with their age grade. So I coach their, so their under 16s, and then work with Gloucester in the academy as well. So coach their development pathway players. So again, based with young athletes, and then also had experience before of heading up rugby programs in schools around the UK.
So you've been around the world of sport and education quite a bit, and the focus has been on rugby.
Yeah. So always been on rugby. Always been on rugby.
And Andrew, what's your interest in the subject of giving feedback and advice?
Well, for me, it's probably one thing I've learned more. I've done loads of webinars, loads of CPD courses, RFU coach courses, level twos, level threes, and rugby coaching. And what it's always come down to is I've learned the most from when I've had feedback. And really in my personal development, so my rugby philosophy is based around that better people will become better rugby players. So we've got to focus them on people first, as opposed to just a rugby player of what we see in front of them. So for me, the most important aspect of my development as a coach, but also the players' development as people and players, is feedback. And you know, it's always that thing of, you know, the perception of feedback is influenced by who's giving it, which is usually quite an important thing. If someone respects it, so that's when it can sometimes be a bit difficult for some people to receive feedback if they don't necessarily respect the person or how they perceive them. And so from my point of view, so I'm not from a, I didn't play professional rugby, so I didn't have a lot of coaches have a 10-15 year career in rugby, so automatically when they go into a coaching setup, people respect them and they want to hear from them, they want to get their feedback, whether or not that feedback might be delivered poorly or it might be delivered really well, that they'll take it on board because of who they are. So for me, that's where I've had to come at it from a different tact. So the way I give my feedback across is I show the people I work with or the players that I work with that I care about them and I appreciate them. So for me, going down more of the holistic approach of care and appreciation has meant that my feedback's probably had a big impact on them.
So you've noticed a difference when feedback works well.
Yes, definitely.
That's something I want to ask you about in a moment. But you know, there's something else I noticed in what you said, Andrew, that, and I think it's incredibly helpful, is that we are not just talking about the other person and giving feedback to other person. Right at the beginning of this conversation, you actually referred to yourself, I think.
And yeah.
I think you said that of all the educational experiences I've had, personally, I found receiving feedback for myself to be incredibly useful.
Yeah, definitely. So my best example of that is when I sort of first got into rugby coaching, I coached as I was coached as a player, which was very much like our coaches would be on the sidelines kind of shouting information on, telling us what to do. Training was very tell. It wasn't questioned like it is now. So when I first went into coaching, I was coaching at a private school in Worcester, which is in the Midlands. We had a guy in there called Sean Perry, ex-England international. He now coaches with Wasps. But he basically, I was coaching the boys. There was a game going on and I was, you know, on the sidelines, a bit like Alex Ferguson type-esque, shouting information onto the pitch, telling the players where to stand. And he pulled me to one side during the game and just said to me, why are you doing that? He said, why are you doing that? And I said, oh, I'm coaching. And he said, are you? Like, how is that coaching? And he said, I don't want you to answer it now. He said, just think about it and we'll speak about it afterwards. And wow. I cannot tell you what happened for the rest of the game, because all I was thinking about was what he said to me. Why am I doing it? And for that moment, yeah. I thought to myself, what do I even know what coaching is?
Yeah. And I guess that's got a lovely parallel with what all is saying. You know, that as a practitioner, she got to the point where she asked herself, why am I doing this? And yeah. I hadn't quite thought of it like that before, that actually what happened to Orla was probably she started getting feedback or started being humble enough to wonder about the feedback that she was getting from the patients who yeah. weren't changing. And so she got to wonder, well, why are they not changing? And what does this mean for me in my practice? So I love the way you've pinpointed that personal element, Andrew. What I'd like to just ask you before we say goodbye is how you can, your experiences of feedback working well. And Andrew, you've pointed to the personal element, an element of humility, of being able to receive it. You've talked about the importance of a good relationship. Yeah, person first, yeah?
Yeah.
Anything else that you'd like to pinpoint that you've noticed on the basis of your experience that helps?
So I'd say the biggest thing for me, and it's something that I learned off Wayne Smith, the very famous New Zealand coach, is an openness to learning is key. So it doesn't matter who you are or what level you are or where you are as a person or where you work or coach or what business you work in. Fundamentally, if you don't have an openness to learning, you will not take feedback on board, because immediately you've got a closed mindset, as opposed to being, it doesn't matter who the person is, doesn't matter what level they are. They might even sit underneath you in a hierarchy of a business or an organization or a team, but that person might give you feedback that will change your life. And as long as you have that openness to learning, I believe that that's the difference. That's what separates apart the people that go and win World Cups or become the best coach developers or the best people in the world. That's the separation for me, that openness to learning.
It's interesting that, Andrew, and it's what I love about being involved in sport myself, is that you can interact with the players and you can interact with people and start creating a culture. You can talk to them about the importance of this humility and interest in learning. In Orla's case, right, you can't. The patients come in and the patients go out, right?
Yeah.
But what I've noticed from what you're saying is that what Orla probably did was create a culture of humility about learning in the relationship that she has with the patients.
Yeah.
So she makes the patients feel sufficiently comfortable to be brave enough to learn.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm just noticing links between our different guests. And I wondered if I could hand you over to Joel. You might like to, I feel like I'm hogging it a bit, Andrew. It's really been... a huge pleasure to meet you, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
Definitely.
Joel, would you like to ask Andrew anything?
Mainly I'd just like to kind of offer a bit of a reflection on what I heard you say, which is that, you know, is it sometimes getting feedback at the right time in the right way can be pivotal in our careers or in our personhood, and being open to hear that. I like the connection there, Andrew. And I guess what I'm wondering about is how can you, particularly working with young men, like, you know, 16-year-olds, they're not the most open folks to listening to feedback and being, you know, told critical things about themselves. How do you start working and creating the relationship within your teams?
So for us, I will want the players to drive the environment. So that's a lot, puts a lot of risk on me as the coach. But what we allow the players to do is take quite a strong element of control over how training runs and how they want to play on the pitch and all that kind of stuff. Like everything with Scotland is it's quite structured. They tell us how the team wants to play, but almost the sort of behaviours, the values and the standards of what they want or what the team is, that we let the players decide that. So straight away, we put the onus straight back onto them. And then that helps us build the relationship with them, because we're showing an interest and I'll tell the players what my values and behaviours are. So I'll open myself up a little bit so they can see that a bit, that I'm a human being. I'm not just someone that's 15 years older than they are. So I'll open myself up in the hope that they'll be able to do the same, because I've given them an element of control over the environment that they're in.
So you sort of like the Gandhi saying, you become the change that you want to see in the team.
Exactly.
And that you do that modeling.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
And work with them in a very collaborative way where they take ownership of the heart and soul of what it means to be a team.
Exactly, because the way I look at it as well, through the sport aspect and the team aspect, is a lot of these players won't go on to play professional rugby. Statistics show, you know, it's the 0.01% that will go on to play international rugby, right, and the 0.5% who will have a career past 3 years. So really, our main focus, or my focus as a coach, is to what skills can I give them that are going to help them in life? So what can they gain from this environment now that's going to help them in further education, or help them when they go off to be a dad or a father or a boyfriend or go and get a full-time job? That's the way I look at it. We're trying to give them the tools for life, because the reality is they probably won't make it as a pro rugby player.
Yeah, and it's into that context that you generate a kind of a culture so that people are open to both giving and receiving feedback.
Yeah.
And that applies to you as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I'll ask the players for feedback on myself, and it will sometimes be anonymous. So we can say, there's a box in the changing rooms, there's a pen and paper, don't write your name on it, but just put some feedback down on how you thought the session went, or how did you think it went. And sometimes you get, it was really good, but sometimes you'll get a few in there that'll be like, it was rubbish, I thought it was boring. And they're usually, that's when a teenager can be blunt, because they just say it how it is sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But it's the humility to receive feedback on an ongoing basis that would be an important value for you as a rugby coach.
Definitely. I have to be open to feedback, because at the moment I close myself off from it and don't become open to it, I believe that's probably the moment that I'll probably stop learning and have a negative impact on an environment.
Yeah, and Joel and I have got this Swedish colleague in the mental health field, although he's in criminal justice, who every time he talks to a client, he takes out a ruler from 0 to 10. And a few minutes into the conversation, he asks this person, a criminal, how are we getting on in this conversation? Give me some feedback. And I so, like it's really good to see the pointers and the links. Listen, Andrew, bye, hey. And thank you so much for your time. And I've got this quite strong conviction that you and I are going to be in touch, because, you know, the risk of talking to someone that I didn't know has been well worth it. And thank you so much for your time, eh?
No, brilliant. Yeah, thank you for having me on, guys.
If you ever want to bring your under-16s to Australia, I'm affiliated with a rugby club here at the Gold Coast, and we can get you some games.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love it for a holiday anyway, because the weather's a lot better than it is up here.
Well, if you make it down here, just come on. Give me a call.
Amazing. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Bye, Andrew. Thanks, man.
And cheers.
We'll get away from rugby nerd talk right now. Okay, cheers. All right. Bye.
We had to have a little bit, Steve. We had a rugby. We had to have a little bit.
Yeah, no. Joel, I think now's the time for me to present those three words, that simple framework. Yep. And we are going to pass the subsequent discussion, another interview, and indeed a demo through the lens of this framework on a foundation that I think has been beautifully described thus far, which is that this is a person first, patient, player, student second, that it's important to build an atmosphere of trust and mutual respect and to have the humility to receive feedback yourself. So upon that platform, I want to ask Steve to present us with a slide. Over a period of decades in working in motivational interviewing, we've distilled the process of giving information, advice, feedback into this framework, which has a to and fro quality. And if you remember Joel's point about giving and receiving and his reference to engineering, it has the to and fro quality in a conversation of being a lot like a dance, which is why both he and I readily said, yes, this is not just a task and a skill, it's an art form. Okay. And here it is, the simple framework in a few sentences. To begin with, before giving information or advice, ask the person, raise the subject and ask them what they know or would like to know. And I think you might recall this was one of the two key practical points that Orla pointed to. Then upon that foundation, you're in a position to offer, not impose, not dictate, not dump. You're in a position to offer your information, advice, or feedback. And then thirdly, you ask them what it means to them. So when you're offering, you're not telling them what it should mean to them. You leave that for the third phase. And so what we find here is a framework that many of Joel and my trainer colleagues have found to be a useful way of training, in our case, healthcare and mental health practitioners. And we would say to you that we've watched people getting better and better at doing this dance. And with your agreement, Joel, I thought we might move on to speak to our good friend, Judith Carpenter. Okay.
Well, there's no way I'm going to disagree with you on that, Steve.
Okay. Now look, Judith is a very experienced dietitian like Orla. And She's a close colleague and friend of Joel's and mine, and she's been a trainer in motivational interviewing for many years. And she's about to come online, I believe. Have we got you, Judith? I think she's here with
here
us.
She comes.
Judith, we can see her. She's coming back. She'll get us up. Hi, Judith. Thank you so much.
Hey, Judith.
Hi, both of you. Nice to see you, and thank you for inviting me.
No, I know.
Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. You can see we've traversed quite a lot of fields in this journey, and we wanted to have the conversation with you looking specifically at this ask, offer, ask framework.
Sure.
Okay, because we reckon that you're somebody who might be able to bring this to life for us. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I suppose, how about this for a question, Judith? How does the framework ask, offer, ask actually pan out for you in everyday practice? Okay. Does that?
Almost with every clinical encounter. It'll be very rare for me to have a clinical encounter that wouldn't actually embrace this in some way. And just listening to the conversation that's gone forth already, I agree, it's an art and a skill in equal measure. And Andrew spoke about building a trusting relationship. And interestingly, I found it to be a way of building trust. So it can be used very, very helpfully at various stages of having a discussion or conversation with someone.
Wow.
And if it helps, Steve, I was going to give you an example that sprang to mind when you first asked me to think about this, because maybe that'll bring it to life for people.
Love to hear it.
Yeah. So I work, as you know, but obviously most of the people on this webinar wouldn't, in specialist diabetes care. So I work largely with people with type 1 diabetes in a clinical setting. And I had a young woman who was asked to come to see me, and she was an angry young lady. And the backdrop to this was that she'd wanted to be trying for a baby.
Yeah.
And her diabetes wasn't really optimally controlled enough to be able to do that at that point.
Yeah.
According to the consultants that were working with her.
Okay.
And so my conversation with her had been preceded by a really difficult conversation she had had, where a little bit like that stop it video.
Yeah.
That we love. She was basically told she couldn't try for a baby.
Okay, kind of quite simple.
Yeah, very direct. And to give the fair due to the clinicians that were doing that came from a place of care and concern from their perspective. Yes. They were thinking there's worry, there's concern, there's difficulty here. Yeah. So this wouldn't be a good time for this young person to be doing this.
Yes.
So when I met her and I got to hear some of her story, relatively quickly on, I asked her what her understanding was. So I did the ask. What's your understanding of why the doctors were so concerned about you even thinking about trying for a baby at this time? In relation to your diabetes. And she had a little bit of guidance. She already knew some stuff.
Yeah.
But there was some other information I thought that would be helpful for her to hear. And so to be able to use the offer and do what Orla was talking about, would it be okay with you?
Yeah.
You let me know. I'd like to share with you some of the reasons maybe behind why the doctors feel so strongly about this.
Yeah.
And maybe that will help you to understand just where they're coming from and where they're seeing this, but also for you to know what you're potentially up against.
Wow. Can I just stop you there, Judith? Because, you know, what I notice in that conversation is respect for her as a person, respect for her choice, respect for the fact that she has some wisdom and knowledge herself. Yeah?
In ways.
And then permission asking, which gives her the space to say, well, I'm not so sure, but she presumably said Yes.
Yeah, she was curious. She was curious. Yeah. And I think to develop that curiosity for someone who came in initially pretty angry.
Yeah.
Was a helpful place to land this. So I was able to tell her the sort of reasons, and I don't need to go into that now. But I was also able to just put a sort of sow a seed with her a little bit, because I remember saying to her something along the lines of, you know, because of all of this, what some women choose to do at this time is to take a moment to think about how they might get better control of their diabetes to give themselves the best chance. I don't know if that's something you would be interested in doing or not, but some women choose to do that. Wow. And then I came back with my final ask. So given what we've been talking about, what are your thoughts? What's going on for you right now? And what was interesting is that she'd listen. So it created this space, this pause, where she was able to really hear and think and not have to defend her own reasoning. And she said, I really want to be in the best possible shape to have a baby. I really want to, my partner and I really want to have a baby. We want to do this right. And she subsequently has gone on to managing much better control of her diabetes, so that she's now in a position to be able to put that hopefully into play, and it makes a massive difference. So it was just, I wasn't telling her anything different than the consultants were telling her. I just decided to do it in a different way and ask, share, ask.
Yeah.
Ask, offer, ask.
Yeah.
With a lovely, lovely framework to deliver that. So that's a tangible example, Steve.
Wow, it's just fantastic. So it's just really quite a moving story about being thoughtful about how you do this. Mm-hmm. Made such a big difference to her. And I also sense probably to you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Ola and I are sort of, you know, we were from the same profession and had this exactly the same experience.
Yep.
As an eager, you know, graduate dietitian, you know, before Google was a verb and I was the fountain of all knowledge, I really thought it was my job to make sure that everyone did what I asked them to do, what I thought was best for them. So to find a way of working and to use this type of a framework is, it just makes me feel more satisfied in the work that I do. And I know it has a good bearing with the people I work with, not only in terms of what's going on in the session, but actually in terms of how well they do, because they're making a decision for themselves.
And I imagine that now in this very difficult time of COVID, you're probably working more on the phone.
Yeah.
Do you find you're able to use this in that kind of situation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're trying to work with people to get them to get as good a control of their diabetes and keep them as well and out of hospital as we possibly can. So we use it in lots of different ways, but one of the ways I use it, I work with a young adult group who can be at times quite tricky, but I'm able to actually use this framework to raise my concerns for them about where things are at with their diabetes control. I'm able to do that. Because someone can come back and say, no, I'm not interested. And that's fine too, because it's the way in which we do it.
Yeah.
So that's the art of it, I think. It's the art of how we allow things to land on people and make them an active participant in this conversation that we're having about them.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. And I've got absolutely nothing more to say there. I don't want to be clever in the face of such an eloquent description of what, and I can see Joel's agreeing with me. And, I think, Joel, now's the time to move on in the webinar. And Judith, thanks so much. Hey,
you're just welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Judith.
My only regret is that we don't see what we've had the privilege of listening to this in a visual form. But one day you should write that story down, because it's very well put. And thank you so much, Judith.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, bye, Judith. Thanks a lot. Well, people, now we've had some quite eloquent descriptions of what skillful feedback looks and feels like for both the person who offers it and the person who receives it. What about you? You know, having heard this discussion, thinking about your practice, what would you like to focus on if you think about improving how you do things? Because you want to remain authentic and true to yourself. This is not, this framework's not some kind of thing that sits outside of you that should make oblige you to adhere. You want to be authentic, true to yourself. And the question is, if you were to use a framework like that, what would you like to practice getting better at? And that's the subject of the second poll. Okay. Where if you're restricted to one answer, I think that might be quite good. But if you've got a choice of more, Stephen, I'll leave that to you. It doesn't matter. What we'd like to do is just to have a moment of pause to consider this question. What would you like to practice getting better at? Thinking about your own values and behavior.
Poll is launched now, Steve. People should be able to answer more than one, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, let's have a look and see what... Do, by all means, answer more than one.
So some people can't see the poll, and I'm not sure why that is. But we'll do everything we can to get it up for everybody.
Yeah, that would be a setting at... at the user's end, I'm afraid, Joel. It's okay. It's up on my return feed.
Ah, it's a pop-up box. So if you got pop-ups canceled, you might not be getting it.
It may be that, or it may be a setting in Zoom. We have it's had 80%. Yeah, we've had 202 people vote so far.
Let's
so
go. For the majority. Let's just get a few orders.
202
is plenty out of
253.
Let's get a feel.
Clarifying the needs and understanding before giving.
So the results should be up on the screen for you guys now.
It is, and it's really useful. It's really useful. And the most commonly endorsed item is in many senses the most skillful to execute.
Yeah, one of the scenarios that made me think of is when you're tasked to give feedback that you hadn't been part of creating or trying to be a part of. Someone gives you a job performance or some sort of computerized generated feedback, and you're supposed to go sit down and give somebody the feedback, and you're not connected to the process. That can be quite awkward.
It can be quite awkward. And what you're suggesting, Joel, is that these scenarios where you give feedback can range from low pressure and fairly easy to high pressure and quite difficult. And yeah, exactly. You've pinpointed one that's quite difficult. And it's interesting that you've done that, Joel. You can close the poll now, Steve. Thank you. It's interesting that you've done that, Joel. You know why?
Why is that?
Because I wanted to move on to a demo now, and that's precisely the scenario that I gave myself to demonstrate. Okay.
Fantastic.
And you, I didn't know that. You didn't know that. Okay. No. So I think I'll explain what this demo is about. Joel and I decided that we'll try a demo. Please don't bring Luca Sullivan on just yet. We'll try a demo in the spirit of that Andrew best described, which is that you may as well have a go and be humble enough to take feedback. And so that's what I'm going to do. You're welcome to leave feedback for me in the chat box. When you do give that feedback, I would prefer you to say, what did you think I did well, rather than what I did wrong? Because otherwise it's, you know, anyway. But if you can see some way in which I could have improved, do tell me, okay? But look, I'm going to introduce you in a moment to somebody called Luca Sullivan, okay? And he's agreed to help me with a demo. We haven't done any rehearsal. Luke's not an actor. We haven't done any rehearsal, but we have discussed this. I simply asked, you can move on, you could give us the next slide, please, Steve, because I think that describes a scenario that I gave myself with Luke, okay? So I want to try and demonstrate ask, offer, ask, and I simply asked Luke to imagine that he is Danny, and Danny is a teacher in an elite football club, soccer club, and that does exist in some of these very elite environments. The young people go to the class, which is organized and run by the club itself, okay? And I'm his boss, and as Joel was pointing to, I've had reports from other people about his conduct in the classroom. And I need to give him this feedback before it gets to the stage of it being a disciplinary issue. So it's lockdown now, and I'm asking him during lockdown to meet me online to talk it through. And I'll have one simple framework in my head, ask, offer, ask. And I guess also in the background that this is a person with strengths, not just a teacher with problems, if you like. And so I see myself as operating kind of where you see that arrow at the high pressure end of this continuum, which isn't going to make it fun and easy, but I promise to do my very, very best. So without any further explanation, perhaps you can bring Danny on, okay? And we'll start the demo. Danny, that is you, I can see. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on board. Just want to check your sound's on, Danny. I think your mic's not on. Are you there with us? You there with me, Danny?
Can you hear me?
Can you speak so I can see if I can hear you?
Hello.
Yeah, you're not bad. See if you can turn your volume up.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's much better, Danny.
There we go. I think I just need to get closer to the speaker.
Thank you. If you could do that for me, please, Danny. Yeah. You know, thank you for agreeing to chat to me this afternoon.
No problem. Thanks for the invite.
No, well, I really appreciate it. I mean, it's not an easy time for any of us right now during lockdown. But Danny, I think you know that I wanted to chat to you about your progress in class with the young people.
Right.
And yep. I've got some feedback here to give you about your progress in class. But perhaps, and I'll do that in a moment, I have got some feedback I'd like to offer you. But Danny, before I do that, can I ask you, how do you feel about how things were going for you in class with the kids before lockdown?
Before lockdown, I thought they were going, well, very well for me anyway. I think I do a great job, you know, teaching the players or the students. Sometimes, you know, I feel they don't listen to me. So yeah. I have to get, you know, a bit loud, you know, my voice has to go up a bit to get their attention. That's all I want to do is get their attention and teach them the best I can. But sometimes I think, you know, it's quite hard work to do that with them.
And yet you're the sort of person who really wants to do a good job by them.
Absolutely, yeah. My number one interest, just to, you know, teach them as much as I can in life and in sport as well.
Yeah. And so you can see the links between life and sport. And one of your missions and reason for doing this job is to combine the two in such a way that they benefit from this and they learn and grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's an important personal value to you.
Extremely important to me. Yeah. I found, I started off coaching in South Africa. It was a little town south of Johannesburg, actually.
Wow.
And I just found that giving these kids, I was teaching life lessons and football as well on the side, and giving these kids education in life and how they can better themselves and positive outlook on life made me feel really good. So I got back into coaching when I came back from South Africa many years ago.
And that was one of the reasons why you applied for this job in our club.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you feel you want to progress in your role as a teacher? Because, you know, you and I haven't chatted an awful lot in this sort of way about you know, I know I'm your boss and I need to, you know, yeah. to be your boss, but how would you like to progress as a teacher?
I think a progression stage for me would be to have a better understanding with the players and the students that I interact with, and just learn how to listen both ways with them, I think. Okay. I think it would help a great deal. If we both, if we all had an understanding of each other, it would be a lot easier.
So develop your communication and connecting skills.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And, you know, that's something that I want to be able to keep an eye on and reassure you as your boss, that should there be any support I can give you to improve your skills, we want to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah. That'd be excellent. Anything you want to me, yeah.
Okay, Danny. Now, look, I wonder, would you mind if I got onto the contents of some feedback that I received about you in class?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah?
And,
you know, it's a bit of a tough subject and not that easy for me to take other people's reports, but it's my responsibility to do that. And I wanted to make sure that I was honest and open with you about this, and then we'll see what you think.
Okay.
Is that okay, yeah?
Yeah, fire away.
There were two areas where reports came in that I wanted to highlight with you and then ask you what you make of it.
Mm-hmm. But
I want to be clear what they are. One of them was that you were sometimes, not always, a bit loose with the youngsters, for example, using swear words in class that might have felt or probably did indeed feel offensive to some of the students. The other one was that you were shouting quite loudly sometimes when you felt they were being difficult.
Right. Okay.
I want to turn the conversation now to you and to ask you how you see this, Danny.
My actions, my behavior towards the students.
Yeah. The use of swear words and sometimes shouting a bit loudly at them.
Well, the swear words, they might just slip up every now and again because I like to have banter with the players, you know. I like to have that rapport with them so they feel comfortable. I didn't know I was offending anybody. Maybe if they could write that down and, you know, hand it over to you and let you know. And you could give that to me in private or whatever. I could work.
So it's not like you're not open to feedback.
I mean, I think I do quite a good job.
Yeah.
At what I do, you know?
Yeah.
I could have a little bit of feedback, I suppose, that would help in the long run. But the swearing thing, I think it's only, you know, it was nothing intense, I wouldn't say.
It's not something you do on a consistent basis.
No, never, no.
And neither do you feel it's at the heart of good teaching for you.
It's not a good teaching technique to swear. I'll try and simmer that down a little bit or completely stop, you know, if it's offending people.
No, I'm with you, Danny. And, you know, thank you for giving me your what sounds like a really honest reaction to this feedback. And I wonder if it's okay with you if we just check in say a month's time, once lockdown's over and you're back in the classroom, if we can just check in again on these issues, knowing a couple of things from my side. One is that I'm here to support you.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the number one. And number two, if there are further problems, that you and I have enough mutual respect to discuss them before things get difficult and there's a need for disciplinary action or anything. I don't want to go there, and I'm sure you don't either.
No, I think that would be a good step to take.
Okay, brilliant, Danny. Danny, listen, that's really all I wanted to cover. So, you know, I'd like to thank you for your time.
And thank you. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah, but before you go offline, can I ask you to please switch now from Danny to Luca Sullivan?
Yeah.
Okay, bang. Okay. Luke and I know each other, okay, because he's a friend of my son's. Well, I don't know Luke very well, but he's a friend of my oldest son. Luke, have you got any comments on that interview of any kind before we say goodbye?
I like the way I used to work in youth, young, you know, youth leadership. I used to do a youth leader in an area around by me in Ely, and it was called Tralee Youth Centre. And I can relate to what steps you're taking, even if it's with young people themselves talking to you and going through those steps of why they get so angry, or you know, what they need help with, or what you can do to better them. It's just that listening and sitting there and taking it in and not having too much of an opinion, but taking it in and, you know, really listening to what they want. So what you're saying and what you're doing, I think, is perfect way to go.
Do you think I was empathizing with you?
No. I wouldn't say, I think you were trying to get to the point of what I was doing and what we can work on.
Okay. And you felt reasonably comfortable that...
I didn't feel threatened, no. Not at all. It was a very relaxed conversation. It was done very well in point order. So it was good.
Let me look at the chat column, because I set myself up for people commenting.
Can I jump in and ask a quick question?
Go for it. He's there. His name's Luke. You can do what you like.
Yeah, I see Luke. Hey, g'day, Luke. It's Joel here.
How you doing, mate?
Hey, I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for being a volunteer. Did you feel like Steve was listening to you and trying to understand where you're coming from?
I think in those situations, maybe take a bit more time to absorb what I'm saying. And see what the issue is with me in that scenario as well.
Yeah.
For the other people to, you know, so you can work with me as well as the students to get the best out of it. Instead, you know, obviously a conversation like that wouldn't be under 3 minutes long. I know, you know, you'd be.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so what I mean?
In that beginning bit, when Steve was just trying to kind of draw out from you what some of your thoughts and feelings were about how things are going.
Mm.
How was that?
That was good. I mean, I could really express how I was getting on with the students and the players there in the football team that I had. And it gave me like a wide range to talk about, I feel.
Yeah. You were able to talk about why you're into coaching and why it's important to you.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you think it would have been if Steve would have just jumped right in and given you the feedback about, look, mate, you're yelling at the kids in the classroom, you're using profanity?
Yeah. you'd kind of automatically and naturally get on the defensive, wouldn't you? You would put your guard up and there would be an argument straight away.
Right.
So it's very important to have, you know, everyone taking their turn to speak so it doesn't get heated. And questions to be asked in the right way and not threatening.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, man. I'll pass you back over to Steve.
Cheers, mate. Nice to meet you, Joel.
Yeah, good to meet you too.
Lukey, thanks a million. I'm just looking at some of the comments here. Chloe Green, I think, is making a good point that there was no positive feedback handed over. You'll notice that, Chloe, that I wasn't using what's commonly called a feedback sandwich. In other words, you're a good guy. You do really a good job. Then you give the sting in the tail in the middle of the sandwich, and then you give another piece of positive feedback. Chloe, I was consciously trying to get the feedback sandwich idea out of my mind there. But I do take your point, Chloe. I kind of was under pressure of time because I wanted to demonstrate that this can be done quite briefly. Two other comments from me before we move on. One is that within the framework of the three communication styles that we talk about in motivational interviewing, direct, guide, follow, that actually went in the reverse direction deliberately. In other words, I first followed him in the ask phase, then I gave him the information, and then I guided him, and then right at the end, I used a directing style to point to disciplinary action. So you don't start with the discipline and the confrontation. You create a comfortable atmosphere in which the person is happy to talk about the problem, and then you can mention the disciplinary thing if you need to at the end. The other thing I wanted to say about was empathy. I don't know, but I think if you analyze that conversation, you'll find I used a fair number of what's called empathic listening statements. And if I was guided by something that's quite contemporary, if you like, I'm struck by something that the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said at this difficult time. I pulled out a quote from her from a news report, which in which she said this: "I'm proudly focused on empathy because you can be both empathetic and strong." So in honoring her words, I guess what I'm saying is I tried to be strong with him, but also empathetic at the same time. And I didn't see those as in any way as incompatible. Okay, look, we're going to move on. We've got another 5-10 minutes for the webinar. I wanted to ask Stephen to go on to the third slide, please. Now, that was quite a tough conversation at the high pressure end of the continuum. And I wanted to make a couple of comments, if you like, practical pointers to how you can improve your skills. Because as you proceed towards the high pressure end of this continuum, it's a little bit more demanding. And I would pinpoint three things here. First of all is your own mindset. You need to choose the moment carefully and gather yourself before you start if it's going to be a tough conversation. I tried to be tough on the problem, yet still soft on the person, so to speak. And I tried to be honest and authentic. So that was my mindset. The second, I think, really important thing is at the tough end, you want to ask permission. You want to flag your intention to raise the difficult subject from the outside, because otherwise it's inauthentic. And ask permission before you give the feedback. The third thing is about your conduct during the conversation. I try to listen well during the ask phases at the beginning and the end. I didn't actually succeed with this, but I think it's important to emphasize choice, which is something that sang out of Judith's account of her quite equally difficult conversation. So, having got to that point in the webinar, thanks, Steve, you can take that slide off. We wondered what you think. What might you do to improve your skills? And here we have the third poll, where there's a set of options. You can choose as many as you like. What's going to help you get better? Give you just a few moments to answer that. These aren't mutually exclusive, but you can see there's a wide range of things you could do to improve your skills. I wonder what Andrew, the rugby coach, would endorse here.
It looks like most people have voted that are going to vote. There's a few more coming in. Do you want me to?
You were just reading my mind, Stephen.
Let's have a look. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting that. Because I was wondering,
the majority of people want to get feedback on giving feedback.
Say that again, Joe.
Seems like a lot of people want to get feedback and get on giving feedback.
Yeah. I've got a feeling Andrew Brownlee, the rugby coach, would endorse that. And I know that's the device that Orla used in getting better herself.
Absolutely.
So what we're pinpointing here are things you can do, whatever the setting you work in, to improve the skills with which you offer.
Yeah. Even role-playing with your colleagues is a good idea.
Yeah.
And friends.
That's in a more clinical environment, if you like.
Yeah. Well, you can role-play with your friends, with anybody.
Yeah.
If you have a framework you want to take them through.
Yeah.
That's what Provide Offer does.
Right. Okay.
It's the one thing in my MI training, Steve, as we're starting to kind of wind it down and moving into the next bit. There, and usually if I'm doing a one-day or a two-day introduction to motivational interviewing or having productive conversations with people, I tell them this is gold. This is something that you can take out of this training and you can apply no matter what counseling approach you're using, is yeah. how you give people information, advice, and feedback.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, how many people appreciate the permission part of it.
And I think back to the very first question in the Q&A, where this, I think he was a baseball coach in New York or basketball coach in New York.
Lenny. Yeah.
Yeah. Where he asked, well, why haven't I been given training on the how-to? And that takes us a full circle, which is what we're suggesting in this webinar, is it's wide open, folks, for you to get better at this. And I think at this point, sorry, Joel, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say one more thing. I think what this little, very simple but elegant way of giving feedback does is it avoids two things that most of us don't like. We don't like being told things we already know. So when you ask somebody, what are your thoughts about that? Or what do you already know about it? You can elicit that from them. And we also don't like unsolicited feedback. Here's what I think you should do. You know? So you ask some permission. Would it be all right if I share some ideas?
Yeah.
If I put some ideas on the table? And they can say no.
So you can be both strong and empathic at the same time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. People, we're nearing the end. And the final section of this webinar involves a call for support. For a community action project in Cape Town, and Joel and I feel that we're giving our time to these webinars, but we want to do some, basically, we want to feel that we're doing some good out there and improving the quality of sports coaching, education, and support in the community as a result of our work. And here is a project in Cape Town involving sport, dance, and now during lockdown, in a particular gang-ridden township in Cape Town, feeding 3,000 plus kids a day, despite the gang warfare that's actually raging around them at the moment, let alone the incredibly, increasingly high levels of unemployment, poverty, and hunger. And this might sound all heavy and negative to you, but honestly, there's somebody called Ralph Bovers, whom we have met and worked with. And we've connected up with him. And after each webinar, we put in a call for donations to his project, which is incredibly termed Guardians of the National Treasure. Guardians of the National Treasure. These are the children. And I have seen Ralph in action. This is something quite special. And I asked Stephen to show us a video clip of Ralph, who after the last webinar and people donating, he sent us the following brief message. And we want to show that to you now.
Hi, good day from Cape Town. I'm Ralph Bowers, the founder of the Guardians of the National Treasure here in South Africa. I'd like to thank MI and Beyond for your generous donations. Without your help, the work we do here in the community would be impossible. With the funds we receive, we'll be buying 2 non-tech thermal dynamometers. We'll be buying masks, sanitizer, gloves, so we can still support the community in terms of the safety. The social distancing will be looked at, informing people how to wash their hands. So thank you very much. And besides that, we will also then be feeding the kids and the families that need the support from us. So I'd like to thank you very, very much. And Professor Rolnick, thank you so much for all your help.
Okay, so that's Ralph Bovers. And I can tell you that two things have happened since that last webinar. This is not about buying masks anymore. This is about feeding children. So any money you donate will go towards feeding the children. I can also report that he tells me this morning there's been a very unfortunate increase in gang warfare, which it had been fairly quiet during the lockdown, but there's been an outbreak of shooting and gang warfare, which makes it much more difficult for them to move around and feed the kids. I can also report that Ralph has sent me a heartfelt message in the light of what's happening in the United States in relation to Black Lives Matter. And Ralph is himself Black, although in fact, Cape colored, mixed race, Cape colored. And he sent me this message this morning, I think clearly in quite an emotional state, and I thought I'd read it out. Everything I have and give is hard-earned sweat. More like pure lean meat and good wholesomeness. The color of my skin gave me a predetermined journey, one of hard work and always considering others. And it's on the back of that kind of sentiment that we give you the freedom now to donate to Guardians of the National Treasure, which Joel and I are both going to do after the end of this webinar. And we are going to ask Stephen to put the URL into the chat line. There yeah, you
that's,
go.
He's already... That's already in the chat, Steve. I've suspended the chat, so it's the last thing that yeah. people can see.
Thanks so much. So all you've got to do is click on that link, although I can't see a full URL there, Stephen. I assume that it's there. In my chat box, I just see a single https://.
You just need to scroll down, Steve. But if anyone can't see it, it's www.guardiansofthenationaltreasure.org/donation.
Yeah, thanks so much for your help. So on that note, can I thank Stephen for your handling of this webinar. Joel for being such a brother over 10,000 miles away. Andrew, Judith, and Orla for what you've given us today, which has honestly been fantastic. And all of you for participating. And thank you very much. And on that note, we'll say goodbye.
Can
I put a quick plug in for our next seminar?
God, I forgot about that. Good
yeah,
on
yeah,
you.
No worries. That's what we're here for. I think there's something else that's really struck me about the Guardians of the National Trust is all the money that we donate goes right into serving the people. It's not a management layered thing. He literally takes the money out of the ATM and goes and buys the food. So any donation, whether it's $5, $50, or whatever you can afford, is greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
In 3 weeks' time, our next theme is going to be talking about something that I always enjoy talking about, and that's around supporting autonomy. And how much autonomy do you support? And we're gonna have some guests that are working in some really interesting areas around autonomy support with young people and hopefully working in corrections. So anyway, please join us. We'll be sending out a link. Share the link with your friends and colleagues and students. And if you have any questions, just get in touch and we'll do the best we can to answer them. And with that, I'd like to say good night from Gold Coast. It's coming up on 12:35 at night. Wow. The rest of y'all have a good day, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Bye bye.
Ribby Poobah, a yeehaw bookum.